Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm going to call the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee to order pursuant to House Rule 10.01. Today, members, we have several bills on the agenda. We're going to try to proceed as quickly as possible. I know we were not able to get to House File 471 yesterday, but hopefully we'll get to that today. And then tomorrow, members, we're going to be going over the governor's budget, so we will be meeting tomorrow at 10:30 a.m. First, let's take the roll. Ms. Hansen?
Good morning. Good morning, members. Long time no see. Chair Schultz.
Present.
Vice Chair Bonner.
Present.
Lead Albright.
Present.
Good morning. Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Burkle.
Present.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher, present.
Thank you. Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Hansen. Representative Keel?
Present.
Thank you. Representative Liebling?
Present.
Representative Mahler?
Present.
Representative Knorr? I see him present.
Present.
Thank you. Representative Novotny?
Novotny's present.
Representative Pearson?
Pearson, present.
Thank you. Representative Pinto?
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Representative Robbins.
Present.
Good morning. Representative Sandel.
Present.
And Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher, present.
Thank you. Chair Schultz, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. You. Vice Chair Bonner, would you like to move the minutes from March 17th?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the minutes from March 17th, 2021.
Thank you. Representative Bonner moves the minutes from March 17th. Any discussion or corrections to the minutes? Not hearing any. All those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Okay, members, the first bill we have for consideration is House File 11, so I'll move House File 11 so it's before the committee. And this will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Finance Bill. So Representative Olson, welcome to the committee. It's good to see you. Can you please tell us about your bill? And it looks like you have an A3 amendment. Would you like us to move the A3 amendment before you discuss your bill?
I'm sure, Madam Chair, we can move the amendment. And I know that there will be testimony both to the bill as a whole and likely that will address the amendment, but I would like to move the amendment because it does have correct appropriations for the bill.
Okay, so. Thank you. So I'll move the A3 amendment. All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
No.
Okay, the motion prevails and the A3 amendment is adopted. So Representative Olson, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So House File 111 deals with an overpayment issue. In 2019, it came to light that the Department of Human Services overpaid Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe and the White Earth Nation close to $20 million in total for medication-assisted treatment to treat opioid addiction. The problem stemmed from DHS reimbursing tribes for in-person treatment when individuals were actually taking medication at home. Emails showed DHS told tribes as recently as February of 2019 to bill at the incorrect rate. DHS has indicated the state must collect these excess payments. Also in 2019, it became known that Minnesota had erred in billing CMS for substance use disorder treatment that occurred in facilities designated as institutions for mental disease, or IMDs, that were ineligible for federal money. DHS also let counties know about their share of these payments, which totaled over $8 million. House File 11 prevents the tribes and counties from having to pay back these sums of money. Regarding the tribes, the bill appropriates with the adopted amendment $28,873,337 in fiscal year 22 from the general fund to DHS for grants to Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe and White Earth Band of Chippewa to repay overpayments for the medication-assisted treatment services between fiscal year 14 and 19. The grant to Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe is $14,466,122, and the grant to White Earth Band of Chippewa is $14,207,215. Concerning the other overpayment issue, the bill appropriates $8.3 million in fiscal year 22 to the general fund to DHS to reimburse counties for the value of the department's estimate of the statewide county share of costs, which federal funds were claimed, but were not eligible for federal funding for substance use disorder services provided in the institutions for mental disease. DHS will allocate this appropriation between counties in proportion to each county's estimated county share versus the estimated statewide county share. Prior to payment of the allocated amount to the county must pay in full any unpaid consolidated chemical dependency treatment fund invoiced in the county share. As amended, the A3, the bill specifies that DHS shall not recover any overpayment that is caused by or affected by or otherwise result of an error by the department. And this language was retroactive as of 2019. And so before we get to the testifiers, I will say with the amendment, I did want to acknowledge the amendment that was adopted is a work in progress. We know that we want to continue the tribes and the department and others and myself have been in touch, and we want to make sure that section of the bill that was adopted is actually workable. And so we've been having a lot of conversation, but know that that's not quite where we need to be. We need to have more discussion in that, but the rest of the bill, I know the testifiers will speak to and is supported by the stakeholders. So with that, I know there are a lot of testifiers, including the commissioner, and so I will turn it over to them.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Let's go to Commissioner Harpstead first. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Chair Schultz and committee members. In 2019, as you've heard, we discovered payment errors by the Department of Human Services that added up to 0.1% of our total payments over the previous 6 years. We kicked off three simultaneous efforts to deal with that 0.1%. Operation Swiss Watch was a full Lean Six Sigma process improvement effort by our own Office of Continuous Improvement and an outside consultant to put stronger process controls in place across the department. That report is due out any day now. Not wanting to wait for such an in-depth report, we also kicked off Operation Stopgap, whose results were reported at the start of this session to this committee. We also formed a commissioner's advisory panel chaired by Bill George of Harvard and formerly Medtronic and Dr. Penny Wheeler of Allina Health, including our four HHS committee chairs and others, who saw a full report of our recent progress on Monday of this week. I'm pleased to report that we discovered no new payment issues in the department in 2020. Not that there will never be another one, with $17 billion flowing between federal and state government, 87 counties, and hundreds of providers every year. Back to the errors from 2019, we have since scoured all the claims associated with them, paid back the federal government where necessary, and invoiced the tribes and counties for the overpayments and underbillings in these cases. I will go on record once again this year to say that these were indeed both errors by the Department of Human Services. Minnesota Statute 16D.02, passed by the legislature in 1994 and others, requires the department to recover overpayments and or underbillings from the entities that received them, and they have been invoiced for them. Of course, the legislature has the authority to make an exception to Statute 16D.02 to pay these funds or to make an exception by ordering the commissioner not to recover the funds. I do not support legislation that would remove the recovery requirement for funds paid in error going forward. You never know when a simple mistake in a complex system would accidentally send several million dollars to another entity that we could catch quickly and recover. And we regularly make period end accounting adjustments with our thousands of contracting entities. I do support the legislature taking the action to put these two historic errors behind us, especially as we have come a long way toward hardening our process controls to avoid such errors in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Harpstead. The first testifier is Lenny Findey. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Leonard Findey and I serve as general counsel for the White Earth Band of Ojibwe. I'm also an enrolled member of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. I'm here today to testify on behalf of the White Earth Band in support of House File 111. Representative Olson and Commissioner Harpstead have done an excellent job in outlining the history of this matter, so I won't repeat it now. Suffice to say, DHS admittedly made a years-long and costly error in the billing reimbursement for our medicated assisted therapy programs. These programs are vital to our efforts in combating the deadly and costly opioid epidemic that has been ravaging our tribal communities for far too long. We are here today, however, due to an anomaly of state law. Under Minnesota Statute Section 256B.064, Subdivision 1CA, and Section 256B.0641, Subdivision 1-2, DHS can recover overpayments even when the error falls squarely on DHS's shoulders. Importantly, these statutory sections apply to all Medicaid providers in the state, and currently state law makes no room for exception or recognition for instances where sovereign tribal governments are the service providers. House File 111 would appropriate the money to cover DHS's error and resolve this matter in a way that will allow us, the tribes and DHS, to refocus our energy and resources on combating the opioid epidemic that is still claiming lives in our tribal communities at an alarming rate. Here at White Earth, we've had two opioid-related deaths just within the last week. Now, throughout the time of addressing this issue, we have appreciated the leadership of Commissioner Harpstead and the relationship that we've developed with her. She has shown herself committed to the principles of tribal sovereignty and a strong government-to-government relationship between the state of Minnesota and sovereign tribal governments. However, a different Commissioner of Human Services with a different philosophy could potentially utilize the statutes mentioned above to the detriment of tribes if DHS were to make an error in the future. Therefore, in addition to supporting HF 111, White Earth urges the legislature to consider a statutory change that recognizes the sovereign status of tribes so we do not find ourselves in this position again. Thank you for your time today, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. Miigwech.
Thank you, Mr. Finday, for your testimony. Next testifier is Commissioner Weckman. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you today. My name is Barb Weckman-Brecke, and I'm a Scott County Commissioner, as well as a member of the AMC Human Services Policy Committee. Today, I am joining you to speak on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Counties and Minnesota Intercounty Association in support of Representative Olson's House File 111, a bill to reimburse counties and tribes for funds and costs incurred as a result of DHS billing errors. We thank Representative Olson for her authorship of this bill and for Commissioner Harpstead's public support as announced today. As other testifiers have noted, House File 111 addresses an issue that stems from three state-identified errors. The focus of my conversation today is a substance use disorder, IMD, billing issue in which the state improperly billed the federal government for certain services that counties carry out and are now in turn asking for counties and tribes to pay back a portion of the funds owed to the federal government. What is clear and agreed to by all parties is that regardless of how these mistakes happened, counties and tribes had no way to anticipate or control these errors. In a state-supervised county-administered system such as Minnesota, counties really rely on the state to implement and communicate the federal regulations, provide billing systems and technologies, offer training, and oversee the compliance with the federal regulations. Counties should not be expected to be financially responsible for errors within these systems, in particular because the counties are not at fault regarding these errors and have no ability to plan or prepare for the unexpected costs. As you all can imagine, repayment really gives counties two bad options. One, to take funds from existing budget programs or reserves, which would potentially impact an array of services we provide to other clients and citizens. Or we could increase our property tax levy to accommodate the payback, which that's not a real popular option for us. Neither of these options is an appropriate solution to a state-level billing error, and we are really grateful for the bipartisan and executive branch support to remedy this situation. We know that this session will present extremely limited opportunities for additional spending. We are hopeful that the rosier February forecast combined with additional federal relief dollars may assist you and your committee in identifying the resources necessary to solve this bipartisan and bicameral supported proposal. So in closure, on behalf of my county, the Minnesota Intercounty Association, and the Association of Minnesota Counties, we thank the author and the committee for their time. We look forward to continuing to work with both parties both chambers, and the governor's office to seek a permanent resolution to this issue. Thank you for your time today, and let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Weckman-Brecke. The next testifier is the Director of Public Health and Human Services from St. Louis County, Linnea Mersch. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name and affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you today. My name is Linnea Mersch, and I'm the Director of Public Health and Human Services for St. Louis County. I'm also testifying in favor of HF 111 on behalf of St. Louis County, as well as representing both MACSA and the Minnesota Inter-County Association, or MICA. Thank you, Representative Olson, for authoring this bill. Thank you, Commissioner Harpstead, and thank you, Commissioner Weckman-Brecke, for the overview of fiscal challenges. I'd like to just share a little bit from a county director's perspective of the difficult place this puts us in and why we continue to talk about really what in perspective is a small amount of dollars in the state's budget. The process, as you've heard, by which counties are billed by the state for their share of substance use disorder treatment costs is quite complex. Counties have action steps at the beginning and the end of the process. We determine eligibility, authorize services, and then pay the bills that are sent to us. DHS manages all of these cost shares, settings, types, and this ever-changing IMD determination, the status of which impacts the county, federal, and state share of each individual bill. You know, at its root, this isn't a billing issue, but an IMD determination issue. This presents a problem for counties because counties don't have a role in that IMD determination and had no way of knowing there was an error in the equation used to determine a portion of a bill. You know, so why this matters and why I'm here today, for county directors to have to come up with funds during this new fiscal year, especially this year marked by an ongoing pandemic, when budgets are strained with new costs, higher needs, uncertain reimbursements, financially impacted communities, a request for additional levy support in 2022, when our own county boards are signaling little to no support for levy increases, is difficult, if not impossible. You know, in closing, I just reviewed St. Louis County's opioid overdose data for 2020. We saw our highest number of opioid-related overdoses since we started tracking in 2013. Fatalities also increased, even though Narcan use and other strategies continue to increase. St. Louis County, as many of you know, has been disproportionately impacted by the opioid crisis, and we continue to see the impact of drug and alcohol use and abuse on individuals and families. St. Louis County's share of this $8.3 million is disproportionate to our population, our tax base, and our budget. It's the third highest amount in the state. And that's because of the number of qualifying individuals receiving treatment in some of these settings where that determination changed. As a director, I need to advocate for investments that continue to change the tide in prevention and earlier intervention and that are proven effective substance use disorder strategies. In closing, last year, the governor's supplemental appropriations bill included covering this full cost of this IMD determination issue, and we're hopeful that this will be included in this year's budget recommendations as well. Thank you for your time, and I would also be able to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Mersch, for that information and another thing we need to fix in this committee about the IMD determination. And thank you for sharing that information about St. Louis County and the experience of individuals there with opioid abuse. The next testifier is Chairman Farron Jackson from Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation and then proceed with your testimony. I think you're on mute, Chairman. Can you unmute and then proceed?
Okay, can you hear me now?
We can. Please proceed with your name and affiliation, please.
Anine, Chair Schultz, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak at this hearing today. My name is Farron Jackson, Sr., and I am the chairman of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. I am here to express Leech Lake's support for House File 111. As sovereign tribes, we stand united. The Leech Lake Band's position from the onset has been that we will not repay the money because we are not at fault. That means our position to this day. And the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report confirms that we are not at fault. We know that requiring the tribes to repay this money would not reach a meaningful resolution nor address the ongoing crisis our communities face. Seeking repayment in excess of $14 million from the Leech Lake Band will result in catastrophic cuts to important services and programs needed by the most vulnerable members of our community and will ultimately only serve to exacerbate the opiate epidemic in the long run. This bill would ensure that an error on the part of DHS does not negatively impact our most marginalized and needy citizens. This is an urgent issue for the legislature and was derailed by COVID during the 2020 session. The nonpartisan office of the Legislative Auditor's Report in 2019 confirmed that the overpayments were the result of dysfunction at the Department of Human Services and the ban was not at fault. The administrative law process is not providing relief. It's being dragged out until 2022. It is extremely burdensome for the band, and the outcome remains uncertain. There is simply no way that Leech Lake, the LLBO, can pay this money back without creating significant harm for our communities. Miigwech.
Thank you, Chairman Jackson, for your testimony, being with us today. That is all I have for testifiers. I will note that we have Jason Decker here from the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe and Grace Elliott from the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe to answer questions members may have. I believe they represent their legal team. So members, at this time, we'll turn it over to questions from members. Please raise your hand if you have a question. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. You know, we've heard this conversation in the past, and sadly, I must say that this just highlights what is wrong with government these days and why folks don't trust the discussions and the decisions that are sometimes made. Commissioner Harpstead, you mentioned, and I've heard you say this before, that the 1.1% of a very large budget, that you've tried to, clarify the issue, but I find it troubling, and I don't think it's appropriate to equate this with a budget that has the largesse that yours does, but in a more, specific way, it really, I might say, is a bit flippant in terms of the impact that it has on county budgets, which are nowhere near the size of yours, and given COVID's circumstances, have become much more tenuous. So I would appreciate it if you didn't marginalize nor equate it to gap accounting, as I suggest, or as I hope that you aren't. Madam Chair and Representative Olson, in your amendment on lines 2.4 and 2.5, you declare that the commissioner shall not recover any overpayment that is caused by, affected by, or otherwise the result of an error by the department. Are you setting precedent then for any agency to be indemnified from any error that they might create on behalf of the state?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Albright. So as I mentioned in my opening, this language is still a continued discussion. This bill is being laid over, and we heard from the commissioner that obviously this would be somewhat unworkable. And we've also heard from the band as well, from White Earth, from the testifier, that we need to find some solution so that we don't have to have something like this happen again. So I'm very cognizant of the issue you raise, Representative Albright, around setting precedent, and that I think needs to continue to be a discussion to get to language that would be workable for the department, but also address why we're here today.
Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, so I would take it, Representative Olson, that this language does not yet exist anywhere in statute.
Representative Olson.
Madam Chair and Representative Albright, I couldn't answer more broadly than what I have been working on and what's in front of me. So I'm very conscious of what, again, we're trying to do and to try to get this right, but we wanted to reflect the concerns that were brought forward. Again, that the testifier from White Earth mentioned, but yes, continue to work to make sure we're not setting a precedent that would make it impossible for departments to implement or exist with something like this. So we'll be very conscious of this language moving forward.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Olson, currently, as I have read it in Minnesota law, the clawback provision that DHS and others have typically used in other occurrences, that normally comes into effect when a provider receives too much money for an error coming from their end, not a mistake made by the state. Why are you now indemnifying the state from errors, but yet having an opportunity to still claw back the money from, in this case, the general fund?
Representative Olson?
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, I don't believe that's the intent. The intent is to say in a situation like this where the department has already paid back the federal government, but they are still required by law to have to recoup payment from the tribes. So that's the spirit of what this is to say that right now they're still required to recoup these payments from the tribes. And we're saying that in the event in the future of something like this, and we were able, that we would not be requiring that, essentially the situation that puts us forward today.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Olson, so are you suggesting by virtue of precedent that any error created on behalf of the state, whether it be an agency or an individual, a statewide officer, that now the general fund will pick up the tab for taking care of that oversight or mess that they've created?
Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, no, it does not require a general fund appropriation.
Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, this is precedent setting. This is a watershed amendment, and how we handle this corrective measure based upon DHS's creating a mess, based upon their inability to understand the circumstances, whether the federal government offered guidance or not. Whenever someone has made a mistake, I think they should take account for it and not say we've corrected it and moving forward, not making any more mistakes. That's all well and good, but you know, that's the grace that we offer each other, but there still has to be an account for the past indiscretion, past error of their ways. And so I have brought this amendment in the past. You will see it again because I think it's that important. But when an agency makes a mistake of this nature, irregardless of the size of it, it is an important opportunity for us to say that we are good stewards. We are intended to be stewards of the money that has been appropriated to us out of the pockets and the paychecks of Minnesotans all across the state. And for us to then say, well, we'll just cover the mistakes. We're going to gloss them over and we're going to move forward, I think is irresponsible. If DHS really felt that they had made a mistake and they wanted to recover and recapture the trust that sometimes has been lacking in this department, I certainly urge DHS to take a hard look at recovering this money by looking at their own budget. They made the mistake. I don't think it's fair for the entirety of the budget to cover over the error in their ways when other programs and other departments are also going to be fighting for their own budget. The general fund cannot be just the banana stand, if you will, for taking care of messes that agencies make. And I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Representative Albright, for those comments. And I will just note that since 2019 and the OLA report came out, Commissioner Harpstead has been working, and she can comment on this, but to turn things around with Operation Stopgap and Swiss Watch, and that errors are less than 1% now of the budget. And you know how much money is funneled through from federal funds and then state funds. DHS has a very large budget, so that small error rate is amazing. And compared to the private sector, it outperforms most private companies. So I think that Commissioner Harpstead's been doing a great job, and her team, on making sure that you minimize the errors. And I think we see that with the data and her approach. And so I'm going to let her respond, and then we'll move to Chair Liebling. Commissioner Harpstead.
Thank you, Chair Schultz and committee members. Only to say I had no intention of being flippant about the dollars that might be affecting our counties and tribes here. And just to put the dollars in perspective, I report that error rate because I think it's important for this committee to know that errors in the Department of Human Services have not added up to 10% of our budget or 50% of our budget, but 0.1%. And it's important for you to understand the size of the situation. It's the only reason that we continue to report that rate. And as we've said, we're going after the 0.1% with all these efforts that are about to be put into execution inside the department, and that we hope then will even make our error rate lower. So that's our intention. And if the department was to find these dollars in its own administrative budget, it would reduce our ability to implement the fixes that we've put in place for our payment system and would only make them worse. And so that doesn't seem to me to be the right approach here either to fixing this problem. Thank you.
Commissioner Chair Liebling.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you. I was going to say very much what you said, Madam Chair, about this. You know, this idea that the department is like a person and we need to punish it is just, honestly, I just find that absurd. You know, we all as legislators bear some of the responsibility here. And Commissioner Harpstead has done an amazing job. And I hope that you'll all get an opportunity to see and understand the changes that she has made and is continuing to make in the department. I mean, this is an unbelievably complicated enterprise. And some of what I saw in her presentation was that legislators really have a role to play in making things work better by simplifying the inputs to the department. So this idea that somehow we're going to punish the department, I mean, I hope that, you know, if agencies are people, then I guess maybe, I don't know, are corporations people too? I don't think so. I think that we have to look at these as systems and try to, as legislators, adjust the systems to make compliance with all the rules more and more possible and easy and understandable. So that's something that we can all do. And this idea that we're going to punish agencies for making a mistake is just ridiculous in my book. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, I'm not
Madam Chair, could
questions.
I respond to that?
You have 30 seconds, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Liebling, certainly respect your opinion, but if I were in the private enterprise and I was found to be culpable or accountable for this type of an egregious error, particularly when it went so far as to ignore both state and federal law, then I do believe and I would expect that someone would be held accountable. But yet we seem to gloss over that. You know, no one is responsible for this issue except for DHS. For us to suggest that we were partially responsible, I find lacking in substance, particularly when we were not aware of this. And yet, even after the OLA report came into light, we have yet to see accountability on the part of this agency. What they have done is say, well, we're learning from our mistakes and moving on. That is not how things happen in the private sector.
Okay, I see one more member has a question, and then we are going to move on to the next bill on our agenda. Vice Chair Bonner.
Great, and I'll try to be fairly brief. I want to thank the testifiers for coming today to speak to this issue, and particularly the chairman for taking time out. I think our ability to go out into the community and discuss the amazing way, or the, I should say, the tremendous impact that opioids are having on some of our tribal communities is really at the heart of this issue. And certainly we understand and want to make sure that we're doing right by our tribes and by those communities, that they're getting the resources they need to improve. So I really appreciate that. Also, I just wanted to say, I know that, you know, many of you know I'm being in project management, process improvement is a huge part of what I do. And I know that for members, it may not be as apparent, but the amount of turnaround that we've seen in terms of process improvement that the department has done in such a short amount of time is truly inspiring. And it does not happen that fast often. And so I just want to be clear that they have done an incredible amount of work. And I know that work is ongoing, and I applaud that. We're doing a really good job. I can tell you I've also worked in an industry in which I know what it's like. Those coding errors are easy to make. I also know it's a real challenge to make sure things are done well. So I appreciate that we're continuing to work on our process to make that better. And so I thank you for that. And I also acknowledge and understand that there have been some legitimate concerns today and that we certainly have more work to be done to make sure that the language is right before this passes out to the floor for consideration. And I want to thank the bill author for continuing that effort to work on that language and make sure that we get it right and that we're doing well by both our state and our tribes and our counties.
Thank you, Vice Chair Bonner. And I just want to add my two comments is one, I appreciate all the work Commissioner Harpstead's been doing and her team. And two, you know, we can blame other people all we want, but what we really need to do as legislators is fix the problem once it's discovered and work together on fixing those problems and giving our agencies the tools they need to make sure they can get programs out there in the public to help people of Minnesota. That's why we're elected. That's what we need to focus on. And I'm going to give the last word to Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the testifiers today. I heard loud and clear that, you know, from Commissioner Harpstead that there has been a great amount of work to address the problem within the department, and thank her and her team for all that they've been doing. And we heard that from the testifiers. And I think we've also heard just a desire that we want to move on. The problem has been addressed within the department, and we are ready for the counties, the tribes, and the department to move on, but do so in a way that we're conscious of that we do well in the future and that we set up our systems to work to do that. And I've heard that today. And so I appreciate the discussion. I appreciate the hard work that DHS has done, and I appreciate the spirit with which the testifiers have come today and hope that this can be the step we need to take to move on from this incident and do the good work that our tribes and counties are doing for their people. So thank you for your support.
So thank you, Representative Olson, and thank you to all of our testifiers and Commissioner Harpstead for joining us today. So with that, members, House File 111, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Finance Bill. The next bill we have for consideration is House File 388. House File 388, I'll move that so it's in front of our committee, and it's going to be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Knorr, it looks like you have a DE amendment.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay, would you like to move the DE amendment?
Yes, please, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative. Thank you. Representative Knorr moves the DE1 amendment. All those in favor of adopting the amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the DE amendment. The motion prevails and the DE amendment is adopted. Representative Knorr, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is the Cultural and Ethnic Communities Leadership Council. This is a very important council for the Department of Human Services. It advises the commissioner on reducing disparities and inequalities that exist in our society. Quite frankly, this council implement strategies to reduce inequalities that we see in various programs within the state of Minnesota when it comes to the Department of Human Services. It also defines who is considered to be a council member and also some of the requirement under that chapter. We also put in place a compensation for the public members based on the regular councils and advisory councils in the state. That is about $55 for the meetings attended by the members of public to pay for services such as childcare and other needs for the members. Quite frankly, the council plays a vital role. We understand the significant challenges that we have. As we all know, that Minnesota is one of the best states when it comes to everything. And when you look at the specific communities, when you look at the disparities that exist, when you look at the outcomes that we have, we're still lagging behind when it comes to BIPOC communities. So this advisory council, given the significant impact on the lives by the Department of Human Services, it has played a vital role. In fact, many states are looking to see how they can implement similar programs or agencies or councils so that they can address the systemic inequities, so they can address the issues that are created by the social determinants of health. Quite frankly, I'm impressed by some of the members who have been, I've had the opportunity to speak with, who have highly spoken of the council and how to improve it. We also want to make sure that the council focuses on the public, those who are impacted daily by the programs and policies that we create, and we're here to support the community going forward. And this bill also removes the expiration date at a time that we have addressed the significant racial and disparity gaps that exist in our state. I appreciate your support, members. And Madam Chair, I think there are individuals who have signed up to testify on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Noir, for bringing this bill forward. The first testifier I have listed is Mariah Norwood. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, I am Mariah Norwood. I am an enrolled member of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma. I currently occupy Dakota Territory in Southwest Minnesota. I work for MDH as the American Indian Liaison for Infectious Disease, but I also am a member of the Cultural, Ethnic, and Communities Leadership Council as one of the American Indian community representatives, and currently serve as the CECLC's Legislative and Policy Committee co-lead. I'm here today on behalf of the CECLC. We're asking for this committee's support and approval of HF 388 so that we can continue and grow the important work of the CECLC. For many, like Representative Noor said, Minnesota is a great place to live. In polls, Minnesota ranks highly among states for providing public health and wellness. However, while that may be true for some Minnesotans, for many others, that is not the case. Minnesota ranks among one of the worst states when it comes to health and wellness for people of color in communities like my own. These disparities are seen across many departments of among many items within the Department of Human Services programs and services. The charge of the CECLC is to advise the Commissioner of DHS on reducing disparities and inequities that affect racial and ethnic groups in Minnesota. The CECLC is a rich collective of racial and ethnically diverse community leaders and American Indians who are residents of Minnesota. We are also refugees, immigrants, LGBTQ+, and people who may have a disability or live in greater Minnesota. Our shared humanity fuels our efforts to advise and co-create solutions in partnership with DHS leaders and community partners through a community and equity impact lens. We aim to reduce race-based disparate outcomes through deconstructing structural and systemic barriers in policies, budgetary and operational decisions, and practices. We seek to work in true partnership to increase efficiency, effectiveness, and equity. We aim to be focused and push for accountability. HF 388 seeks first and foremost to allow the council to exist by eliminating the sunset so that we can continue this charge. Second, as a volunteer council and as a council of leaders from many different communities, we are seeking the ability to have compensation for the time spent on this important work. As the council has grown in its knowledge and collective voice over the years, the bill amendment language includes policy changes that will support our efforts to be more focused and push for accountability. For example, our current statute allows the commissioner to appoint a chair. As a volunteer council and as a council of leaders from many different communities across Minnesota, we are seeking the ability to have more than one chair appointed so that we can continue to practice and honor shared community leadership across this council. The bill also seeks deeper support and partnership from the commissioner and enhances the duties of the council. The potential of Minnesota cannot be fully achieved without the courageous leadership and priority investments to advancing equity in our state. It is with great hope and deep commitment that the CECLC moves forward to address social and political determinants of health for racial and ethnic communities and families who utilize and receive DHS programs and services across all 87 counties of Minnesota. The CECLC has organized itself to lead in collective with council members, communities, DHS leadership, and the legislature, and we look forward to the opportunity to continue this partnership for the benefit of all Minnesotans. I urge your support of HF 388. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Norwood, and thank you for being involved in serving on our Youth Leadership Council. Let's see. Looking for questions from members. I don't have any more testifiers listed, unless I have not listed all of them. I'm not seeing other testifiers. Are there questions from members for the author or for the testifier? I'm not seeing any questions. Representative Noor, closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and to Ms. Norwood. So thank you so much for the testimony. This is an important council. Quite frankly, it's about partnership so that we can look into the lived experience for individuals and also to be able to provide programs that reflect the need and to be able to really making sure that the department is working collaboratively with the community members that we serve. So thank you so much, and I appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Noor, for bringing this bill forward and addressing our disparities in Minnesota. We are definitely living the Minnesota paradox, where many people are thriving, but so many are not. And this hopefully will help DHS address our disparities in our state. Okay, with that, members, House File 388 will be laid over for possible as amended. House File 388 as amended will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Finance Bill. Thank you to our testifiers and thank you, Representative Noor. The next bill we have for consideration is House File 2265. So I'm going to move to re-refer House File 2265 to the Ways and Means Committee. This is my bill. And members, this is a forecast appropriation bill for programs of 2021, and this is going to be used as a vehicle bill. That's why we're sending it to Ways and Means. So any questions from members? Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, I'm just wondering when the companion in the Senate will be introduced.
We just got this bill this week, so we've sent it to Senator Abler, so hopefully he'll introduce it as soon as possible. Any other questions from members? Seeing none, okay, I'm gonna renew my motion to re-refer House File 2265 to Ways and Means as recommended. This is gonna be a roll call vote. Ms. Hansen, Chair votes aye.
Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner?
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Lead Albright?
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Bolden?
Aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkle?
Aye.
Burkle, aye. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen?
Hansen, aye.
Thank you. I wasn't sure if you made it back from your other committee yet. Representative Keel? Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Representative Noor?
Aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Thank you. Novotny, aye. Representative Pearson?
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen?
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Robbins?
Aye.
Robbins, aye. Representative Sandell? Thank you. Sandell, aye. Representative Schumacher. And Representative Keel, would you like to place the vote?
Yes, aye.
Okay, thank you so much. And I'm not seeing Representative Schumacher right now. So Chair Schultz, that's 18 ayes and one excused.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Thanks. The motion prevails and the bill will be sent to Ways and Means. Let's see, the next item for consideration is House File 471. This is the bill that we were not able to get to yesterday. So first we have to adopt the division report. Chair Fisher, would you like to move the division report from Behavioral Health?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the Behavioral Health division report.
See, this is a voice vote. So Chair Fisher moves the adoption of the division report from Behavioral Health. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the division report is adopted. Okay, members, House File 471 is now in front of our committee, and this will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Finance Bill. There was extensive discussion in the division on this bill, but we do have time for presentation and questions today in our committee. Representative Baker, welcome to our committee. I believe you are now on.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us. Please introduce yourself and present the bill.
Madam Chair and members, thank you very much for having me today. I am really proud to carry a bill like this because I think it really gets down to the core attempts to try to lighten this tightly woven onion that we all see in government, where we try to have so many regulations and safety nets, it becomes more problematic than it does to get really the attempt of what we're trying to get through when we're trying to help people in substance abuse and residential treatment and so on. My friends at Hazleton, Betty Ford Foundation, brought this to me because we're talking about duplication in licensure accreditation. There's a couple places in Minnesota that are really doing some amazing work, New Way and Hazleton Betty Ford, that use what's called the Joint Commission's accreditation. At the same time, the Department of Health, DHS here, does a very robust licensing as well in Minnesota. What this attempts to do, members, is actually tries to choose one over the other and has still our state connection to make sure that if there's any prevailing problems or claims of misuse or anything like that, our Department of Health is still very much engaged to helping with those problems. So this bill carefully walks through that process with DHS. I find our partners in DHS are really engaged in this conversation. I think it has very good chances of doing some good things to help lighten the load for our providers to do more patient care and some less paperwork, some less tours and licensing processes that happen that take up a lot of time for operations. And further, so I think we can move further next year maybe with other accreditations with PACE, maybe the CARF folks that are under that accreditation. So with that, Madam Chair and members, I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Losey, who's from the Betty Ford Foundation and can kind of help us with the bill and the details.
Thank you, Representative Baker. We'll move to the first testifier. It's Jennifer Losey. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Jennifer Losey. I'm Vice President, General Counsel, and Secretary for Hazleton Betty Ford Foundation. And I'm here today to speak in favor of HS 471. In my role in the foundation, I lead the enterprise-wide legal licensing, accreditation, and compliance team. Hazleton Betty Ford Foundation is the nation's largest and leading nonprofit provider of comprehensive inpatient and outpatient substance use and mental health treatment for adults and youth. Headquartered here in Minnesota, we provide life-saving treatment in states across the country, both through telemedicine and on-site in our 19 locations. Hazleton Betty Ford also collaborates with an expansive network throughout healthcare nationwide, supporting access to quality behavioral health treatment in every state. Our organization also encompasses a graduate school of addiction studies, a publishing division, an addiction research center, recovery advocacy and thought leadership, professional and medical education programs, school-based prevention resources, and a specialized program for children who grow up in families with addiction, a program that is now free to all children in America and whose curriculum has been made available internationally to even younger kids through our partnership with Sesame Street. As COVID-19 has ravaged our country, we've seen an increased need in both mental health and substance use disorder treatment services. According to a recent survey by the Centers for Disease Control, almost 41% of people who responded said they have struggled with mental health issues related to the pandemic. Additionally, since last spring, we've seen a 14% increase in alcohol consumption and a 41% increase in binge drinking among women. Behavioral health providers are closing their doors, health systems are reducing behavioral health programming, and recovery services are shrinking due to the economic consequences of COVID-19. Hazel and Betty Ford is on the front lines responding to this epidemic for behavioral health during the COVID pandemic, including through embarking on an expansion of mental health services, substance use treatment offerings in new communities, delivered in person and via telemedicine to people who need help. As both the services and professionals at Hazel and Betty Ford are state regulated, oftentimes with widely variable licensing and certification requirements from state to state, we see and experience very different regulations and oversight. We support efforts for national standards of care and practitioner licensing, such as the bipartisan bill Representative Morrison has authored in the House for interstate compacts of licensed psychologists here in Minnesota. We also support efforts to improve quality through regulatory deeming for nationally accredited organizations, including through Joint Commission, found in HF 471. We are also very pleased that New Way, another large SUD provider in Minnesota, is supportive of this legislation. We understand that DHS has some questions about the bill, and we have committed to continue to work with them on the details of this legislation. As background on the Joint Commission, it accredited many types of behavioral health providers, including substance use treatment providers. These standards are written to establish very robust expectations that focus on safety and quality of service, while leaving many of the specific operational details up to the discretion of each provider, so long as the overarching stringent standards are met. The Joint Commission always defers to and supports state-specific requirements and expects accredited providers to follow all applicable state, local laws, rules, regulations, and standards. As an accredited provider, we are held to a much more extensive and robust process than state regulations in many areas, including safety, environment of care, medication management, quality and performance improvement. And our experience across states is that many state legislatures agree and have put in place some form of full or partial deeming status for nationally accredited organizations. This bill, consistent with other deemed licensing rules for Minnesota DHS licensed providers, would offer providers like Hazel and Betty Ford the ability to drive outcomes through consistent and quality-based oversight that the Joint Commission and 245G provide, without duplicating efforts and by eliminating administrative burdens. The bill would allow us to deem into compliance with certain licensing requirements based upon our status and regular survey through the Joint Commission accreditation. Nothing in this bill would preclude DHS from investigating issues that could arise out of one of our facilities. This bill does not create, but rather would reduce the licensor's regulatory burden by eliminating duplication of efforts between the state of Minnesota and the Joint Commission. This bill would also entice other providers to pursue a Joint Commission accreditation, having the effect of raising the field of care in the state to the highest standards nationally, because accreditation is quality driven. As the state of Minnesota looks to the future of regulating healthcare, particularly behavioral healthcare, creating and modifying current state regulations and statutes through telehealth expansion, interstate compacts, and deeming and reciprocity will be key tools in the state's toolbox. The status quo in our field will no longer suffice. People with mental health issues and substance use disorders deserve quality health care and treatment for their disease conditions. And this bill is one step in the right direction to make that happen. So thank you again, Madam Chair, Representative Baker, and members for your time today. I ask that you please vote in favor of House File 471. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
How many facilities have the Joint Commission accreditation currently?
At Hazelden Betty Ford.
In Minnesota?
I don't know the answer in Minnesota in total, but I will say all of Hazelden Betty Ford's facilities in Minnesota and nationally are accredited by the Joint Commission.
And Madam Chair, I think what I understand it too, mostly, and Kevin Goodnow is on the call too, that might be able to answer this as well. I think mostly it's Hazelden facilities and New Way facilities. It does not cover most of the rural residential treatment facilities there under what's called CARF accreditation. And so that'll be sort of, I think, a next step, Madam Chair. But right now, this covers most of those providers that I have mentioned. And unless I was wrong, I'll let Mr. Goodnow comment to that.
Mr. Goodnow, please state your name for the record and affiliation, and then if you can add to this.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much. My name is Kevin Goodnow. I am work with the Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation. And it's the Joint Commission accredits a lot of organizations, but specific to this area that we're talking about with SUD treatment, my understanding is there's two major providers in Minnesota that are Joint Commission accredited, and that's New Way and Hazelden, as Representative Baker mentioned.
And Mr. Goodnow, are they accredited as a entire organization, or is each facility accredited?
Madam Chair, I would defer back to Ms. Losey for that.
Ms. Losey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, each the Joint Commission accredits in a couple of different ways, but in Minnesota, there's one accreditation, but each facility is visited and is subject to the Joint Commission standards. So the accreditation as listed is a Minnesota accreditation, but the Joint Commission is required to visit any facility that has any 24-hour care. So that would include our residential facilities in Center City, Plymouth, St. Paul. Additionally, they do visit outpatient sites as well as part of the survey process.
Thank you, Ms. Losey. Thank you, Mr. Goodnow. Any questions from members? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Baker, I just want to personally thank you for bringing this initiative forward. And Ms. Losey, thank you for your testimony. Representative Baker, I know that this initiative is very personal to you, as it should be to everyone. I'm sure that we all have really compelling stories in our background from someone that has been healed from and by the services through these organizations. And I could not think of a more appropriate and timely piece of legislation in light of the governor's executive orders, which has really compelled and actually forced upon a number of people, you know, the crushing isolation, which leads to, you know, mental health issues as well as substance abuse. So I couldn't be more supportive of this, and I wish you all the best as we move forward, and I urge members on both sides of the committee table, as it were, to support this initiative. So thank you again, Representative Baker.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Chair Liebling.
So thank you, Madam Chair. And I just, every time I hear this line of argument, I have to raise my hand and respond to it. You know, the pandemic has had a lot of bad effects, but these are not the effects of the governor's orders protecting people from getting sick. You know, in this Human Services Committee, I just would like to remind us all that, you know, even for the people who have survived COVID-19, we could be looking at many, many years of impacts on people's health. So let's just remember that the pandemic is the pandemic, that the bad results from the pandemic of things that are, you know, unintended consequences, unfortunate consequences of the governor's attempts to keep people safe, that's not the cause of our problems. I thank you, Madam Chair, for letting me say that. I know it's off the topic somewhat, but I just don't want to let that kind of statement go without pushing back on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Liebling, and I agree with that statement. So thank you for reminding us. Remember, the pandemic, it's not unique to the state. People are experiencing mental health, substance addiction problems that are related to the pandemic, not our governor's executive orders. This is being shared across the country and the world, frankly. Okay, I'm not seeing any other questions from members. Representative Baker, can you talk about the fiscal implications of your bill?
Madam Chair, members, I may have to ask DHS if there's any fiscal. I have not seen a fiscal note on this. This should actually reduce the pressure on DHS. There may be some initial work to do up front for this to make sure that we don't miss anything. If there is a fiscal note, I have to be honest, I haven't seen one. I may ask Mr. Burdick to comment on this if he thinks there's going to be a fiscal note. This is meant to make life easier at both DHS and with the providers that we had mentioned. So with that, maybe I'll ask for a phone a friend on that, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Mr. Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Matt Burdick with the Department of Human Services. We have not completed the fiscal note on this. I think we'd still want to assess this. We just met with Hazleton and others yesterday, actually, just to try to better understand all the moving pieces here. This impacts a relatively small number of providers, so I don't think it would, you know, have a tectonic shift on our work, but of course we'd want to do that careful analysis as we get into more of the details, so more to come on that.
Thank you, Mr. Burdick. We look forward to that. Representative Baker.
Madam Chair, I think I see Mr. Doug Berg on. I see him wanting to speak on this issue.
Thank you. Mr. Berg.
Madam Chair, there is not a fiscal note request on this bill. I have contacted DHS about whether it has a cost. They have said it does not.
Thank you, Mr. Berg. Always appreciate your input. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions. Representative Baker, closing comments.
Thank you again, members. If nothing else, the pandemic has made us all look back at our operations harder and cleaner, and what can we really do to make our life better after the pandemic? I think that Hazleton has really looked at this process that many of us have been banging our head against the wall for a long time about the amount of paperwork and regulations that we all face with today's challenges. I know the state of Minnesota is very concerned about liabilities, and if we were to loosen this up, we're concerned that we can get in there again. I think that I really see the department working diligently on this issue. I think they have a very genuine interest in moving this forward. I hope that we can move this bill through this year, and maybe next year we can look at possibly looking at furthering this umbrella of people that we can lighten up the load a little bit on duplication of licensing services, but still maintain the state has the ability to check on anything that comes their way with concerns of public health. So, Madam Chair and members, I really do hope that you support House File 471 as it moves along. This is a really good idea that we should move on. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Baker, and thank you to our testifiers today. So with that, members, House File 471 will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Finance Bill. Okay, members, we've made it through our agenda today. Really appreciate your support being here and getting things moving through our committee. So tomorrow, 10:30 a.m., I will see everybody on a Friday. I appreciate your giving your Friday mornings to us as well as we go through the governor's budget presentation. And I hope we will have a good discussion with lots of questions. So with that, members, we are adjourned. Thank you.